Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by the Montana Miracle Man, Max Ada. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. I think they're good. They're good. Right. Tell us in the comments if you're good.
There we go.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Kumquats and Front Squats. It's a lifestyle. That was submitted to us by one of our fans whose name escapes me, but you know who you are, because obviously if you're a big enough fan to be sending us lifestyle brands, you listen to every episode. So good job to you. If you have funny fake-ish fitness lifestyle brands, you know, send them our way. So today we're going to be talking about the future of weightlifting. Laser cleans, hologram jerks, but not quite. A little bit different future of weightlifting. We're going to be talking about the changes that the IOC just imposed on the IWF and what that means for the future of the sport, for the athletes, for the possible expulsion of weightlifting from the Olympics. How confused do you think CrossFitters would be? They couldn't call it Ollie.
Yeah, does it lose that designation?
They wouldn't be able to call it
Ollie. Once it's no longer in the Olympics, it's not Ollie lifting or Olympic weightlifting.
Yeah, it's just... I mean, it's not Ollie lifting currently.
Okay. It depends who you ask. But it would never be able to be called that.
No.
Formerly, the lifting formerly known as Olympic lifting.
Maybe they just go to a symbol, an unpronounceable symbol.
it's just like a circle with a barbell through it.
Yeah.
Looks kind of like an ampersand.
So let's go ahead and get right into it. The changes that have happened, and this is maybe about a week old, probably 2 weeks as you're 2 weeks old as you're listening to this. There has been a change from 8 weight classes per gender to 7 weight classes per gender. A reduction in the total number of lifters. So from 2016 and 2012 Olympics, there was 260 total competitors in weightlifting. Now there will only be 196. And the change of the team structure, a full team in the previous Olympics was 6 men and 4 women. And now it is going to be 4 men and 4 women. I think most people were under the impression with the new creation of the 90-kilo class that probably the plan was 5 men and 5 women as a full team.
Yeah,
but
I
either
can
way.
See that. But I mean, the Olympics is special because they're always having – they have to limit the number of competitors. Mm-hmm. It's not like the World Championships or something where you can basically have – it's the governing body organizing the thing. So the Olympics only gives you so many places. So that makes sense that they would reduce that, you know, and not split them up evenly. If they, at any chance they can to kind of cut competitors out, it's probably – in their favor to do it.
Well, you got less weightlifters, so you got more rhythmic gymnastics.
Yeah, well, you can squeeze in more of that three-on-three. Is that what it is?
Three-on-three basketball.
Pickup basketball is the next one. Just street pickup basketball.
Yeah, it's gonna be Sidney Dean and Billy Hoyt for Team USA.
Yeah.
Versus the guy from the air up there.
And
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon.
Player coach for...
He's got to be a coach.
Yeah, he's player coach for, like, Cameroon.
Yeah. Was it Cameroon?
I don't know. It was Cameroon.
Probably an unnamed country.
Yeah, they might have made one up.
Just kind of Africa. Somewhere in there.
Nondescript African village. That's going to be a tough matchup, though.
Yeah, that's a... I don't know if anyone can come close. You might have...
Because Sidney Dean, he's too much... He's just about the show. He's not about the substance.
No. Yeah, he's... He's a wild card. Yes. He's a real wild card.
Billy Hoyt, and we're talking about White Man Can't Jump and the air up there, if you're missing these references.
Are those movies?
But Billy Hoyt, obviously, is totally patterned after Larry Bird. They've got this new – there's a new Lakers-Celtics 30 for 30 going on ESPN, 4 parts, 5 parts. It's like 6 hours. I'm halfway through it. For now, when I go home tonight, I'll be the full way through it. But good Lord, Larry Bird could ball.
Yeah.
I think people picture him as just this, you know, elbowing guys in the face and shooting three-pointers. Larry Bird was as Magic Johnson as Magic Johnson was, with like behind the back no look passes and stuff.
Yeah, he was great.
Trash talking people and clowning them so hard. There's this one like crazy off the little backboard, like he passed it to himself off the backboard. Not quite like LeBron did in the finals where he came in for a dunk, but yeah, for a layup, it was still sweet though.
Do you think that he didn't receive as much? He's not. I mean, he's obviously regarded as incredible, but do you think he's less, you know, less there because of the race thing? Like he's sort of maybe it's not as quite obvious because it's like Larry Bird's always kind of like, oh, he's like that straight edge kind of guy.
Well, definitely, the way that this documentary, this 30 for 30, is painting it is that the media across the country was playing it up as the race of the mostly white Boston team versus the mostly black LA team. You know, blue collar versus Showtime kind of thing. But if anything, yeah, I can't speak to the flair that he played with being downplayed, but I think probably his career as a whole maybe get downplayed because it was relatively short.
Yeah.
Like he retired in 93, but the last 4 years of his career, I'm pretty sure he was playing with like multiple herniated discs that probably needed surgery.
Well, Larry Hard went hard. Larry Bird went hard.
He did. There's another documentary about him. I watch a lot of sports documentaries, a lot of documentaries in general.
Well, you gotta get that sports history degree.
Halfway there.
How else are you gonna get it?
I call it The Courtship of Rivals, and it's just Magic and Larry. Larry Bird was just he's on the spectrum. For sure.
Oh.
But just no bullshit kind of guy. like he didn't want to talk to anyone. He just wanted to play basketball and crush people.
So good.
If he would have had any explosive qualities in his body, seemed like a great personality for a weightlifter.
Oh, really? Yeah. Interesting.
The being 6'10 part.
Not so good.
And really slow and not being able to jump, not as good. But the personality part, got it down.
Nice.
So some way, let's just come back to the original discussion. So we've established the changes to the weight class, the changes to some Olympic qualifying structure. Obviously, the 2018 and 2019 World Championships will be what determines how many spots each country gets. But it's going to be, you know, it hasn't been announced how that will change. Currently, it was like, you know, first through sixth on the men's side had full teams, six men, and then 7th through 15th was five, and you know, 16th through 21 was four spots, 22 through 25 or 26 was three spots, and then we were coming in, you know, 28th with the one
rounding out that last capturing one,
with kind of the like you tried hard guys, so here's a spot. And that's changing. Now, I'm assuming that's going to change now. With only four spots for the top group, you know, are they going to go 4-3-2? I'd imagine that there's going to be less teams who are qualifying, having automatically qualified lifters, and more teams having to go at large lifters. So if it goes, I think it was top 25 or 26, were automatically qualifying 3-plus lifters previously. Now is it going to be top 20, top 18, top 15, who knows? But it's going to be harder for sure to get people in.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Changing that, it probably affects us a lot more, I imagine, than it would most other countries. I mean, it's always competitive. You have to assume it's the most competitive it can be. So it's not really going to have a big impact on people on the top as much as it has on Western countries that are already struggling for those spots.
Yeah, teams who were in the three, in the group who was getting three automatic qualifiers, are right there on the cusp and getting that large qualifiers. And the U.S. is on the rise in weightlifting for sure, but to think if the qualifying structure had stayed the same 2016 to 2020, to think that we were going to go from one at large spot up to the group of four. So, you know, finishing in the top 15, 16 in the country, probably unlikely. So now this kind of top 20, maybe 15 to 25 group is going to be very, very competitive. And you know, so we'll talk about some of our kind of speculation as we go. But the reason that this is all happening, the reason that there is a change in how many weightlifters there are at the Olympics, why there's less weight classes, is that the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, is trying to send a clear message to the IWF, the International Weightlifting Federation, that weightlifting needs to stop doing so many drugs. And
preferably all of the drugs they're doing to be stopped. I think that's that's probably the recommendation, is to stop all drugs.
All drugs, not just...
Just the majority of them.
Okay. I've been reading the Game of Shadows book right now, too, which is an older...
That's a good book.
Older book about Balco, Barry Bonds' scandal and stuff, and this sort of underworld of beating drug tests in track. And amazingly, in baseball, up through like 2002, 2003, there was no testing.
Yeah, there was zero.
Zero testing.
Then it switched to
one test.
Yes, one test.
And it was anonymous.
It was no one's name. Yeah. It was just, hey, 10% of the people on your team failed a drug test.
Yeah. And if it was over a certain amount, then they would start real testing after that. And it was like one positive got you 10 game suspension, four positives for one season.
Yeah.
Where people for track and weightlifting and stuff, one positive is 2 to 4 years. Yeah.
I wonder how many times they went into the test and someone just didn't show up. And you're like, oh, he's not here today. Oh, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Whatever, he's not here.
But as I was listening to it, and I lied when I said reading, it was an audio book, but it's not quite as distinguished.
Being read to you by somebody more famous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone's picturing me in front of my fireplace, my leather-bound copy of Game of Shadows.
Regular Mr. Belvedere scenario.
In my smoking jacket, glass of scotch at the side table as I read Game of Shadows.
Nice.
Hmm.
A chalkboard with equations and stuff in the background.
As I was listening to it, it made me think, like, man, if there was someone who wrote a book like this about weightlifting, because, yeah, the stuff happening in track was shady, and the baseball stuff was just, to me, seemed fairly blatant.
Yeah.
But the weightlifting drug testing,
yeah.
And I'm sure this happens in track, and for sure, like, Olympic boxing and stuff is extremely corrupt.
Yes.
But
you gotta be.
But some of these positives, are a way that people are avoiding positives in weightlifting is not taking the clear or the cream, you know, micro dosing, that kind of thing. It's just bribes.
Yeah. You know the irony?
Not being tested when you clearly should get tested.
I read that book while living with Abhijeev. It was, yeah. That's so funny. I remember being given the book and I was like, oh, this is cool. I'll read this. Because it was all like really big at the time. That was, you know, that was
especially
like
living in the Bay Area.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I'll read this. Someone needs to, like, a Christopher Guest needs to make a movie about weightlifting, because the characters in weightlifting are just over the top. They're insane.
Well, and this is different than the movie, the USAW movie that we've been...
Different than the USAW movie, which we've been casting for quite a while now.
Yeah, about a year and a half. And that's probably its whole own episode.
That could be... that would be just a great episode, actually.
Yeah. Well, let's teaser the USAW movie... Danny DeVito as Butch Curry. I'll leave it at that.
Mark Wahlberg, maybe Anthony Pomponio. We're not sure. Anyways, the super, super neat book, super cool story, all that, everything going on there. Same thing with that story in terms of relating it to weightlifting, because you're reading it at the same time and you're hearing, I was hearing... The stories I was hearing from the Bulgarians were just insanity. People like throwing the European Championships in exchange for $200 and a hooker. just like shit you couldn't believe. Yeah. So it was very interesting to see those two things paralleled.
Yeah. It'd
be a great story.
It would not be nearly as slick as the undetectable, you know, special chemist kind of thing. Maybe China has some stuff like that going on, but I think...
Possibly.
So many more of the stories would be things like people getting paid off, avoiding the test, passing the cup of pee through the hole in the wall, whatever it is. But it's a a shady world that goes beyond just looking at a calendar and saying, I'm going to get tested on this date. You know, things that we've heard, not maybe right from the horse's mouth, but close enough about customs agents holding up, you know, testers, about people being denied visas, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that game of shadows would be a very interesting one. But so this is all happening in an effort to have clean sport. And this is what Thomas Bach, who is the IOC president, said to weightlifting. He said, the IOC executive board has set an additional condition for this sport. And he said that that means that the IWF has until December 2017, this year, 6 months from now, to deliver a satisfactory report to the IOC on how they will address the massive doping problems this sport is facing. You know, in this kind of State of the Union address or whatever that he gave, he said that weightlifting is good for 2020, but that... And that currently for 2024, it will feature all the same 28 sports that were contested at Rio 2016, with the important caveat that they all must remain in good standing with the Olympic Charter. And, of course, singled out weightlifting because of that. With these retroactive positives and everything, it was the biggest offender. And we're going to talk about that more in a minute. But right now, we're going to take a break for a minute in strength history. Doug Young is widely regarded as one of the original power builders and one of the greatest all-time bench pressers. Doug Young possessed a physique, as well as exquisite beard and chest hair, that were as awesome as his 612 raw bench in the 275 class. Young won three consecutive IPF World Championships and had best lifts of 722 in the squat, 612 in the bench, 738 in the deadlift. One of the defining moments of Doug Young's legend came during his 1977 IPF World Championship victory, when he suffered three broken ribs during the squat, and went on to total 1956 by way of 699, 545, 710. Yes, he benched 545 and deadlifted 710 with three broken ribs. Doug Young is tougher than you and me. Doug Young's early system of auto regulation was also a big influence on the creation of the juggernaut method. So now we have to look at, you know, why is this happening? Why are they singling out the IWF? Why are they singling out weightlifting? And it's pretty clear. You know, we've had several episodes of this show talking about these retroactive positives and the scandal kind of unfolding last summer leading up to the Olympics and then after. And it was 50 positives through retroactive testing from the 2008 and 2012 Olympics.
That's a lot.
If you take those retroactive positives, those 50, plus people who tested positive during, you know, the regular course of testing, like at the test at the Olympics, and they got popped a week later, 2 weeks later, plus people who are withdrawing from the Olympics with injuries, you know, in the days leading up to competition. If you're in the know, you know, as we are in the know, you understand what that means.
Yeah.
It's not ouch, my shoulder hurts.
Yeah.
I better leave.
Yeah.
The whole thing. It's ouch, my personal test didn't look like it's going to be clean.
The convenient injury at the most critical moment of your career.
So we don't have an exact number offhand of how many of those positives there were right, you know, at the normal time of the competition, plus the withdrawals. But let's say it was on the low end, you know, 8 between each Olympics. So 16 more positives or would have been positives. That gives you 66 positives. There was only 255 competitors.
Wow.
255 competitors in weightlifting, and over 60 of them likely testing positive, would have tested positive, and, you know, who knows how many of them, if there was more stringent out-of-competition testing leading up to it, would have tested positive. But well over 10% of the competitors in weightlifting testing positive. So it's no wonder that the IOC is singling out weightlifting
actually
in this issue.
What I would be curious to see, that's of total competitors. How many tests are failed of tests done? might be a bigger indicator. It might. What if it's like 98% of the tests administered were positive?
Yeah, because
there's a lot of people that just don't. They don't test every single person.
Yeah.
I didn't think to think about that, but I bet we'd have to find the number of tests done. But I wouldn't be surprised if that number is even more egregious, knowing that, let's say, you know, of all the tests done, how many didn't fail a test?
Yeah, particularly when you look at something like the 94 kilo class from 2012, when the guy who was originally in ninth ended up in third.
Yeah,
and then he tested positive in 2016 or 2015.
Yeah.
I mean, when Norick's positive, he was 11th or 12th. So if guys down to outside the top 10 are testing positive.
Although maybe I might be mistaken, because they may actually test all the competitors when they arrive at the Olympic Village. That would be something we'd have to research.
If people in 11th are testing positive, I mean,
they're probably testing them outside of that.
Yeah, for that weight class at least, because it was like they just went down the line of positive, positive, positive. But If someone knows the answer to that, every single person gets tested, let us know. But yeah, that is a good point. Of the percentage of people who are getting tested positive, it's certainly probably much higher than this, like 12-13%
ridiculous
of the total competitors. yeah. So it's understandable frustrations on the part of the IOC. Now, this probably goes to bigger questions of you know, why do they even bother testing? Like, if they really wanted to have a level playing field, I'm of the opinion that the only way that you could do that is just tell everyone, no, you can do whatever you want. Because if you say you can't do this, someone's going to figure out a way to do it.
Right.
They're always going to get around it. But so with over 10% of the people, you know, about 12-13% of the competitors testing positive for weightlifting over the last two Olympics, and who knows what the future of testing holds, because 2012 resample or 2012 samples can still be retested up to 2020. 2016 samples are going to get, you know, are going to get retested. And last summer, leading up to the Olympics, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, you know, it's going to be such a bad competition, because everyone's going to be clean, more or less.
Yeah, yeah. Not the case.
Yeah, and we had talked about this in episodes last year. Like, is there going to be this significant downturn in performance? And there was not.
Ironically, two men did a triple bodyweight clean and jerk in the first session.
Then one of the oldest records in the sport broken, this 77 kilo clean and jerk.
Clean and jerk, yeah. By a humongous, like, 4 kilos.
Yeah. And then the snatch record being broken by multiple people. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's
probably safe to think that if and when these retests happen, if they're improving the technology as it seemed that they did to catch all these 50 folks from 2008 to 2012 with improved testing, the same thing may be coming.
It seems like there's a few major players at fault here too, or the question becomes, who are the real major players at fault? On one side, you say, okay, it's the athletes that are doping, and they're the ones at fault for the entire situation, or everyone's at fault in some level. But let's say the athletes are the primary ones to blame. They're trying to cheat and they're getting away with it or not getting away with it. The other player would be, it's the governing bodies of these countries that are are not letting go of the way it was back in the day when doping was the primary, you know, it was just the thing everyone did. And they're continuing to, you know, fund state-sponsored doping and pushing it on people, and that's just no one can move past that era. Or the third player, and probably all of these are connected, is the corruption starting from the top down. If you have a system that you can control the outcome of people's abilities based on the fact that you do or do not let them sort of skate by with the use of drugs. So if you have 100 competitors and you say to five of them, if you pay me $50,000 each, I won't test you until this date. So you give them a huge advantage, but you're selling it to them so you can profit. That may or may not be the case as to what happens, or at least the conspiracy that exists, the theory and the – from what I've heard, that's the general, you know, what goes on in a lot of these sports. So is it a combination of all these things coming together that create this situation, or is it – you know, is the corruption diminished now? Is the athlete – are the athletes themselves individually trying to – surpass, you know, and trying to circumvent the rules, or is it still basically the status quo from 40 years ago where state-sponsored drug use, systematic doping, and corruption all play a role together to form, to create this situation? I think if you assume that corruption is a big part of it, you know, and to play the sort of devil's advocate or the conspiracy theorist, it's interesting that, okay, if it's corrupt at the top of the IWF, it's probably also corrupt at the top of the IOC. If it's corrupt, we know it's there.
Yeah.
If that's corrupt,
it's Thomas Bach, the IOC president, hanging out with Sepp Blatter, the president of FIFA, while, you know, on there like
he's a good guy. He just his friends made mistakes.
Where like it's probably in their evil lair built into the side of an island volcano.
They've got laser sharks. Yeah, sure.
They definitely have very angry sea bass lasers on their head, highly agitated. And as they're just counting their bribe money and
Euros.
Thinking like, how should we extort someone today?
And they have a list of sports, and they take their lipstick, and after they put the lipstick on, Steve Buscemi style, they cross off the list. West wrestling. What was it, wrestling a few years ago?
Yeah.
Wrestling, they're done. So are they just systematically going down the line, just extorting the shit out of people? Because you know, okay, let's say you're president of the IWF. You made a bunch of money. You're IOC president. Hey, I need a cut of that.
Yeah.
You're not going to give it to me. Let me show you what I can do to you. And boom, Ilya Illin, boom, 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 down the line. Look at how much of a joke your sport is. It's going to be gone if you don't. Because – when you really think about it, there's no benefit to get weightlifting out of there. What are they going to put in another sport they have to establish corruption in and get their fingers involved in? I mean,
what kind of corruption is going on in 3-on-3 basketball?
3-on-3 basketball. I mean, they're not going to get away with it if
say the professor, half man, half amazing, and Escalade or Team USA.
Not going to happen. Pee-wee hockey, maybe. Summer sport now.
Oh, it was a mix of summer and winter.
They won't get Gordon Bombay.
No.
He's unviable.
Yeah, never.
So then the question becomes, all right, if we're looking at just this purely corrupt system that we're just watching something that's already – it's already over. It's already been solved. It's already unfolded. The money's exchanged hands. It's just playing out, and nothing's going to change for any of us except that, you know – T-Box bank account maybe a little bigger, and Mr. Ayan's bank account maybe a little smaller. Is that the case? And maybe that's just that. We watch it unfold, and there's a slight, you know, pretend. Oh, you know, hey, we're pretending we're doing cleaning up, or is it really that there's an actual effort to do something about it? You know, that's the question.
Yeah, you know, in most cases, I don't put a lot of fault with the athlete. The countries that are the weightlifting powers, you know, who people are watching their hook grip videos and stuff all the time, the Russia, China, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, North Korea.
Yeah.
The athletes are in you know, not that they don't have free will, maybe save North Korea in that, but and China to a degree, but it's they're part of a much bigger system.
Yeah.
They're looking for a way to feed their family and you know, to earn a living.
Yeah.
So those kind of guys, I don't put a lot of fault. When there's an American lifter that tests positive, that's on the on the athlete. You know, that's isn't this bigger scheme.
You didn't have to do that.
Yeah, happening. And you know, I think it's doubtful that Ilya Illin, you know, is calling up Thomas Ayan on the phone and working these deals, or calling customs agents to have WADA, you know, testers blocked at the airport or delayed or whatever. That's got to be a country's governing body for weightlifting,
right?
Working with their own government, working with with IWF, and that stuff is real. That is happening for sure. It's I don't think in weightlifting there's very much clear in the cream, undetectable designer steroid type of stuff going on.
Yeah.
The things that they seem to test positive for are pretty basic.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many drugs available.
Yeah.
I think...
I mean, turinabol and stuff like that. These are old chemicals.
There's nothing super sophisticated about it. And the reality, too, you know, what I remember, that was always the thing, like, maybe 15, 20 years ago, was always, like, these countries have, like, designer drugs. But as you meet the Europeans, and my experience with Bulgarians was, it's very much the opposite. It's like, what's the easiest way for people to not fail tests? Mm-hmm. You just bribe people.
Yeah,
tested. Yeah, plain old-fashioned corruption is, like, no one knows, you know? Like,
that's the ultimate designer steroid, not getting tested.
Yeah, they were saying in that the whole Russian scandal, there were urine samples that had incredible concentrations of drugs. Clearly, the athlete had not expected to be tested at all, or thought their test wouldn't be actually performed. So, you know, we know that's going on. I mean,
I was certainly of the school of thought about the designer steroids in some circumstances. Mm. Looking at China, how successful they've been in weightlifting, and how much, you know, energy and money the Chinese government puts towards the development of their athletes across all sports, but, you know, weightlifting, gymnastics, diving in particular. It would have made a lot of sense to me that, all right, if China's got, you know, all these coaches and all these, you know, masseuses and biomechanists and all this different stuff, they probably have a state-sponsored chemist as well who would have been making something like this. But then 2008 retests happen, and it's just peptides, China, right? China, 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 China. Yeah. And it wasn't anything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
It wasn't anything new.
Yeah. There, you know, they're...
China ball.
They're doing something. They're doing the same thing everyone's doing, just a little better on all fronts, right? They've got more energy going into it. Yeah. They're a little more accurate with what they're doing.
But and to the corruption side of things, and IOC, IWF interactions with this, I mean, it was a very high-ranking Russian coach, right? Who last year or late last year told an American coaching friend of ours, that this isn't what he was taking. Like, yes, he was taking something like a Charlie Francis, Ben Johnson situation.
Right, yeah, it's a different thing.
Like, stenazolone. I don't want my guys on stenazolone on race day. It makes them tight. Like, yeah, they were on, but they were not on for the things that they're saying that they tested positive for.
You're more concerned with your rightness than being playing by the rules. Yeah.
You know, who knows if the IOC says, yeah, this guy, he's positive. Right, a chemical.
That's one of those things where it's like, is that really happening? Everybody's failing for these same drugs. I mean, they did come up with a new test in like 2013 for stenazolol.
Yeah.
So, sure. But is that just a great opportunity to say, we have a new test, here's an opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
That's a very... I think the ramifications of that are what is happening is important for us to know, because we have to understand what the ramifications of that are for us as a country. We're improving, and the more clean the sport gets, the more difficult it is to dope, the better we're going to do. So knowing that the possibility exists, this could all be sort of a sham on some level, is not discouraging. It's just understanding that, okay, while they pop 50 people at the Olympics from 8 years ago through 2016, then session one of 2016 Rio Olympics, two men clean and jerk, triple body weight. I mean, it's just kind of like laughable almost that are we just playing the same thing over and over again? The question too becomes in 2024, when they retest those samples, is it going to be another 50 or 60 people fail for some other thing?
Yeah, because the, like we said, the results of 2016 were not this diminished result. It was something going on.
Right, for sure.
Yeah, you know, and again, maybe we're being conspiracy theorists about corruption in the IWF and the IOC, but it seems unlikely that people are clean and jerking triple body weight clean. You know, particularly when they're from countries who have so many people testing positive, or that guys are breaking 20, year old world records clean. Like, yeah, it just seems very unlikely. So in 3 years, 7 years, whatever, are we back in the same scenario? Because yeah, if it happens again, I'm sure it's just gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the moves that the IWF seems to be making, you know, to this effect of trying to show the IOC that they're cleaning up, that they're serious about it, of course, is going to be positive for the U.S., and we'll talk about that more in a second. But it's positive for the U.S. in the sense that U.S. weightlifting officials are rising up, yes, in leadership,
yeah,
for the IWF, a place that we've really never had, yeah, people before.
Well, Ursula is now the first female vice president of the IWF, which, yeah, is a huge position.
Yeah, so it's Ursula Papandrea, who's the president of the USAW, was maybe a month ago elected, yeah, to be the vice president of the IWF, and she was one of, I think, maybe three or four USA weightlifting related people who,
yeah,
who were elected to different positions there.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Which is huge, you know. That's really big. Assuming that pans out, you know. I think there's one other thing kind of going along here too that may have a bigger impact, because corruption, drugs, all these things, all of this stuff is fueled by the motivation to profit. And the IOC probably at this point sees the upturn of popularity in weightlifting here in the U.S. and realizes, okay, let's say you're making 26 million, 50 million euros in your lifetime running the IWF. That kind of money could potentially, I mean, what are some of the sponsorship deals that, like, pro NBA players have gotten from, you know, Reebok or Nike? I mean, they're that much money in one,
oh, yeah,
one
just check. For one guy.
Right?
Yeah.
The possibility exists that, okay, if we make weightlifting, if we can foster the popularity of weightlifting in the United States by giving them the opportunity to succeed, then, holy shit, maybe there's, you know, maybe that opens the floodgates for big time money to come in. It may never be, it's never going to be probably as popular, not, yeah, as NBA
it's,
or
yeah, it's not
football.
Basketball money, but it's big time relative to weightlifting
but,
money.
But could be humongous money for weightlifting. And then if it grows enough, you have something more substantial than what you had, this tiny little niche sport with, you know, this really super corrupt mafioso kind of run thing.
A lot of black leather jackets. A lot of black leather jackets in the IWF.
Yes.
But yeah, so the U.S. rising up in the leadership is most likely very good for the IWF in terms of pursuing clean sport, because, you know, I think that USADA and the USAW, if you're cheating here, they are going to catch you. They love catching you.
Yep.
You
know? That's their favorite thing.
They're not trying to protect people from, yeah, it. And, you know, I know YouTube commenters, you think that everyone who's strong in USAPL or USAW is all beating the tests. They're not. The testers have been here really eight times.
Oh, yeah.
Since nationals last year.
Every time one of the girls lifts big weights,
yeah,
and posts it, the next day USADA's here.
Yeah, they're here. They're testing them, and, you know, to the game of shadows side of things, it's like, why would weightlifters living barely above the poverty line? They're not Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
They're not Marion Jones getting
right
$1 million Nike multi-million-dollar Nike contracts.
That's just so ridiculous.
There's not big prize money for them to be had. There's really no incentive.
Yeah.
You know, you think that they want to do that so they can get extra online coaching clients?
That's desperate.
Yeah,
that's very desperate.
So, you know, they're clean, and that's great for USA weightlifting, because there's not many people in the world who know how to train clean weightlifters. And, you know, whether it's firsthand, secondhand kind of accounts, these European coaches and lifters, Chinese people, you know, yeah, we've had these European coaches and stuff come over to become US coaches, but talking to these people, they don't think that the U.S. is clean. They just think that we're really shitty at weightlifting.
Yes, they do, right? It's so funny. Initially they came, you know, 2012 and later they started coming over more. And Klokov, everyone was here. And I think they thought we didn't understand how to train.
Yeah.
Because they came over and they were – the Bulgarians are the same. They were – I mean, they were floored. They were like, why are you doing this if you're not taking drugs? You're not going to make any progress. And it was like trying to explain to them, like, well, no, but like, it's against the rules and we just don't do that here. Because in the U.S. there's a big moral, ethical issue, right? Yeah. People want to have pride in themselves for what they've done. They were just so confused, like, well, you're not going to make any progress. Why would you do it? What do you mean, why? Because it's like sport. Like, we do this, you know, for pride and for, like, you know, to win this competition. And they were just like, well,
I see pride.
Yeah.
I see power. I see a bad mother who won't take no stuff off of no one.
Right there. That was such a strange thing to me. And then seeing the coaches come, you know, after all the Russians and other coaches have come over, seem confused, like, oh, the U.S., like, these don't get how to do the lift. Let me show you the exercises. Like, here's a snatch pull. Like, we know how to do that. We get, like, we've read all the books. We understand it. Like, we know a lot about training. What is it that we're, you know, they're confused. Then finally they start to realize now, I think they must get it. Like, we're just not taking drugs.
And then, because there's been the learning curve, too, you know, whether it's Zygmunt, Dragomir, or whoever, coming over and in the early part of their coaching tenure, trying to train the American lifters the same way that they trained the European lifters, and then being like, oh, something's missing.
Putting another system on them and being like, well, why isn't it working? Everyone's hurting and broken.
And then having to adapt it and adapt it. And, of course, you know, through Zygmunt's tenure as coach, the U.S. improved dramatically, you know, the quality of our lifters and the depth of our talent. But it took time for them to make those adjustments, and it would take time, probably more time, for some of these other countries to be able to put aside or to gain the understanding of this is useful from the last 60 years of stuff that we've done, but we have to change it this way and this way and this way if it's true clean sport. So in regards to, like, what classes are being cut or restructured, you know, how there's going to be 7 weight classes instead of 8, we don't really know the answers to that. No one really knows the answers at this point, at least no one that's telling us the answers. So we could make different speculations there. A lot of different things could happen. I would think on the women's side, it seems very straightforward that they'll probably just cut the 90-kilo class since they just added it.
Yeah.
You know, it's still the seat is still, you know, warm. That was a fun year for you, 90 kilo.
Couple girls got some medals, and then we're done with that.
Yeah. So I would figure that that's going to be what they're going to do, because it just seems natural that they just added it. So, yeah, no one got too used to it.
Yeah.
But the other side of it is maybe they're not going to just remove a weight class on either side, but they're going to restructure all the weight classes, something that weightlifting has done 3-4 times
at least
now.
At least 2 or 3.
Yeah, which would reset all the world records. And when they did that previously, it was in an effort, you know, still related to doping problems.
So, yeah.
You know, to erase old records from when everyone was on steroids.
Yeah.
But then everyone just kept being on steroids again. And
they just trained
again.
They have more heart now.
Yeah.
They're training harder.
Yeah. So maybe they do that. There's a lot of different ways they could. That's the one that I'd probably prefer to see.
Changing the weight classes.
Yeah, changing the weight classes, because on the women's side, I think the 90 kilo class was not the number that I would have picked, but I think that's a good having something heavier than 75s, so that the top weight class starts a little bit higher, is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe if 75s and 90s was combined into the 80s or 82s or something like that.
Yeah.
But just a small change in it. And some of this is certainly selfish reasons. You know, I'd love for them to line up the weight classes where it's like our lifters fill them out perfectly.
Sure, yeah.
But, you know, a 50-kilo class would be great for Alyssa Ritchie.
Yeah.
You know, Phil, if you're listening, you have any influence here.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, maybe like an 82-kilo class for Q.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the restructuring would make the most sense for,
I guess starting anew, starting over. I mean, I'm curious, was it actually announced that they're going to eliminate weight classes from the Olympics, or they just said there's an elimination of athletes from the Olympics?
Yeah, well, they said 7 weight classes for each gender.
Okay, so they're going to lose a male weight class.
Yeah, that was clearly established, but the language was not clear about a restructuring, just a removal of the weight class. Hey, I mean, they might just throw a huge curveball and be like, 69's this one.
You're gone.
Both men and women, you guys both got these 69s.
Literally there's a top hat that has every weight class written on it in paper, and Hamasayan is fishing around in there for which one. There it is. The super's gone.
He's got a dartboard divided into 8
blindfolded
quadrants.
Got to make it fair.
His forehead on a baseball bat, spinning in a circle, grabs the darts, throws. So who knows? I would like to see them do a restructuring, new records being able to be established.
Be
if you're serious about making clean sport for this, then allow for new records to happen. Yeah. Go all in on making clean sport. Test people, pop them, test everyone.
Well, you could also make it. I mean, the structure is strange too. The structure now is that if your whole country, I mean, Kazakhstan had like 13 lifters fail one year.
Mm.
They just have to pay a fine to reinstate. I mean, it should be if you fail more than 2 or 3 lifters or whatever internationally, then you're nixed. You're just out, or you're out for 4 years.
And there are several countries that are supposed to be
supposedly suspended from this year's worlds, but I don't know if that's the case or not.
Yeah,
we haven't heard much about it. There's also a lot of these all the Olympic tests. How many people have actually been sanctioned from them? I think it's a very small number of 50 something positives. How many have been sanctioned?
Yeah, and so much of it, too much of it, is up in the air. It's not clearly outlined. Like, I get not having something in the bylaws for this is what we do when there's 50 retroactive positives.
Right.
But retroactive testing is a real thing now. So when it's someone's first retroactive positive, do you just erase their results from that time? Because that's if they won an international medal, there's some punishment in that. But I would be shocked if whatever bonuses had been paid to Ilya Ilyin and money he had gotten from sponsors and for doing those sweet like LG commercials, you know, where he was kind of looking back over the couch and his big LG TV, they're not taking that money back from him.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about this on other episodes with the retroactive testing. I have two friends, Alicia Montaño, who's an 800 runner for the U.S., and Adam Nelson, the shot putter, who were both directly affected by retroactive testing. With Adam in 2013 or 2012, through a retroactive test that for Yuri Bilinog, a Ukrainian shot putter, moved Adam from silver to gold in the 2004 Olympics. And now Alicia, moving from 5th to 3rd through 2 retroactive positives of Russian 800 runners at the 2012 Games. But both of them missed out on 4 to 8 years of being able to call themselves Olympic gold medalist or Olympic bronze medalist, Olympic medalist, and all the money that comes with that. And they're not taking that away from the people who popped and saying, hey, Anna Nelson, you're the one who really deserved this. So
that's the shitty part.
So that a retroactive penalty to go along with a retroactive test is it's weak.
Yeah,
it's weak,
really weak
because, you took a piece of metal away from them. Yeah, that maybe hangs on their mantle, and you took away their name next to it. But it's like they still won. They know they won, and they got the real benefits of it most likely.
Right. That's the hard. That's really the shitty part for those people. Is after the fact, it's over, and you've basically. I mean, you got to think about it too from a perspective of being in one of these countries where maybe economic situation is not as good, and you fail. You know, you know that in a few years you may fail a test because you took something that's, you know, likely to be discoverable later. So what? You got everything you could out of it right off the bat, and then you move on to the next thing in your life. So it's tough. I mean, it's strange.
Yeah, because outside of the people like Ilya who ended up with a lifetime ban from it, you know, like, I don't know what they're doing with Norik on it.
I don't think anything's actually been announced.
Yeah.
Which is one of those things. It's like it's kind of strange. To me, it's like has any drug positive ever really been reversed? Maybe out of all of them, a very small percentage, 1 to 5, may have actually been.
I know a swimmer from Cal named Jessica Hardy had one overturned for tainted supplements.
Right.
One of only two times that I recall that happening, because everyone claims the tainted supplements when they test positive.
Your boyfriend put it in your drink, or, you know.
And they,
somewhere else.
Yeah, so they had it overturned for her, and she went on and tested positive again later.
Oh, okay,
I'm 99% sure of. And the Bulgarian, like 3-4 years ago, they had like 8 guys test positive.
Oh, yeah, for a supplement,
for a tainted supplements, which brought the idea to me, and at that time I did not own a supplement company, but it would be different now. You know, if there are any countries interested in this idea I'm about to propose, is like if they just overturned the whole thing for the Bulgarian team, like, oh yeah, these 8 lifters, it was because there were smashed up D-ball tablets in their protein powder.
Right.
Why wouldn't every weightlifting team, if they're actually going to overturn shit for that for such a weak thing, just be like, hey, smash up some D-ball tablets, put it in this batch, set these aside.
Yeah, we'll use those to test later.
Yeah, and in a couple of years when we all test positive, we're going to be like, oh, it was the protein, and you know, we'll pay you this much.
And
to
I suppose
take the
there
for
might
it.
Be some ramifications for a company to be like, oh, it was an Arth. I mean, not the lengths that people go anyways. I'm not surprised it didn't happen already. But yeah, that's a very strange. This is such a strange, like, there seems to be almost no real serious repercussions.
Yeah,
I mean, you know. Anyways, what I was saying before though, like, was with tests not being overturned, why not just make it much more aggressive and say you fail a test and you're banned for life? It seems to be that the deterrent now is not that strong.
Yeah.
But if you're banned for life and you're not allowed to, you know, be part of it, associate with people that are part of it on a professional level, you know, and they can be suspended too, then maybe you have some leverage against it. Even if at the most it just reduces the amount of, for one, repeat offenders, you'll get 0 repeat offenders, and it reduces the culture of it to some degree, because now you can't really keep participating in the sport anymore.
Yeah, but I think the bottom line for it is harsher penalties, definitely. Retroactive penalties for retroactive positives are bullshit, because it's not affecting the lifter in any way. Like,
he's already served his sentence. He can keep lifting.
Yeah, like maybe 2 years, 4 years of results get erased, but then you just keep lifting as is. But they're not taking the real prizes away, are what, you know, whatever sponsorship or bonuses from the countries and the federations that they're getting. Highly, highly doubt that those are being recouped in any way. And the retroactive positives create such a negative for the people who are getting bumped up, because they're missing out on that time as well. You know, do the retroactive tests, but assign real time penalties along with it. And then if you're serious about clean sport, they need to, with this 7 weight class thing, restructure the weight classes. Don't just take one away and leave all the dirty records. New weight classes, new records to go with it. So we're going to take a quick break for a minute to get to know the Montana Miracle Man a little bit better. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about what happens if weightlifting gets cut.
One of my favorite moments ever, probably ever in my life, we so Abijayev lived in the house, and Abijayev did his own laundry, and he had a wool sweater, and he's probably 5 foot, he was like 5'3", maybe 5'4", very very short, maybe 5'5", you know, and he was pretty overweight at the time, you know, he's heavy, so he had his belly, and he had a wool sweater that he had washed. And it shrunk because he probably put it on really hot water and then dried it at, you know, the maximum temperature, maximum heat, came out, felted, and it was the size for a child. Like, 11-year-old kid would put it on and be like, Mom, this sweater is tight. He comes downstairs and he's
fucking livid because the sweater is ruined and the washing machine is broken because the washing machine ruined his sweater. Now, he goes back upstairs, comes back down 20 minutes later with the solution to this problem. And that solution is he has taken the sweater and put it on himself. It comes up to here. So it's like down like 3/4 of the way down his arm, both arms, super tight on this 75-year-old overweight man. The shirt comes down to his belly button. But his fix for this was to grab the shirt and pull it down below his belly button and take a leather dress belt and cinch it around his stomach so that the shirt wouldn't slide up. So now he's walking around with a leather belt outside of his sweater, tightened around his stomach, as tight as can possibly be so that it pulls the sweater down below his belly button. Still, the bottom 4 inches of his stomach is hanging out of the sweater. The sweater is coming down midriff. He's got a midriff sweater here, leather belt tied on tight. Everything is being squeezed out on top, on bottom. But he's still, you know, the most infamous weightlifting coach you've ever seen. Just intimidating and scary, yet wearing this fucking getup that is so weird. Sitting in a chair yelling at us, just looking at everyone in weightlifters with complete disgust. Stomach hanging out. Belt cinched down tight, just sweater coming down to his forearms, you know. He was so proud of the fix, too. So proud of his method for fixing the broken sweater. I'm pretty sure he wore the sweater 3 or 4 more times like that, too. It wasn't just once.
So now we've talked about why the IOC is levying these penalties against the IWF. We've talked about, you know, corruption in sport, corruption and drug testing and all this stuff. And, you know, talked about some ways that hopefully the IWF is moving in the right direction or can move in a better direction in terms of testing and punishing offenders for doping. And that's going to be great if they do all this stuff and Worlds happens here in Anaheim in December or in November, and right after the Worlds, the IOC is like, yeah, you guys are doing great. You still get to have weightlifting. The other side of that is they do not make a, as Thomas Bach puts it here, they do not deliver a satisfactory report to the IOC on how they will address the massive doping problem this sport is facing. There's probably a pretty good chance that's not satisfactory. It is not a satisfactory report. No. And that would mean that weightlifting would cease to exist in the Olympics coming in 2024. Not that far away. And those Olympics are supposed to be in the United States, right?
Yeah.
So what happens? What happens if weightlifting gets the boot? Well, right off the bat, what doesn't happen is powerlifting takes its place. All right?
Never
gonna go. USAPL, IPF, aficionados, powerlifting's not going to come in and take its place for a lot of reasons. One, I doubt that the IOC would be like, oh, well, this one sport where the people were trying to lift as much weight, everyone was taking steroids. But I bet this other one, no, they don't take any. The same shit's happening.
Yeah.
There's not as much money in it, so there's probably not the same level of corruption, or people are just doing shit for cheaper.
The analogy there is, let's say you're a really beautiful woman. You're the Olympics. You're a beautiful woman. You're dating Brad Pitt. You dump him. Along Brad Pitt being weightlifting, along comes powerlifting, Danny DeVito.
Oh.
Not gonna. That's mean. You're that's not mean. Getting it. Not gonna happen, right? Okay, Mel.
That's harsh.
Who else?
Well, you're giving weightlifting too much credit, first off. Yeah. This is more like a Kevin James, Danny DeVito situation. Yeah,
it's more Kevin. It's more like the gap is pretty big there.
Yeah, this isn't a twin scenario of Arnold to DeVito. Yeah,
right. It's classic twins. Yeah, there's only one Olympics. There's no two girls in that movie. Yeah.
But, yeah, powerlifting's not coming to take its place.
Ever.
It's period. It's. We have an episode on this from last year. Powerlifting, korfball, same level. All right.
What if korfball got in? What if they brought korfball in? And what if korfball?
Probably 3-on-3 korfball.
Street korfball. What if korfball is dirtier than everything else combined? It's just they're just loading up on PCP before they
play. What if street weightlifting? Street technique.
Street weightlifting.
Yeah, you gotta have that street technique.
I'm not sure what that is. Still not sure yet.
No one is. But yeah, powerlifting's not coming in. So what happens to weightlifting if it gets cut?
Well, here's my thought. Scenarios for weightlifting when it gets cut. One, no longer will countries dump endless resource into it.
Definitely not.
Really, there's only a few countries actually dumping resources into it. I mean, even in Russia, they're not dumping resources into it. It's still a relatively small...
Yeah, but...
There's money going in.
I mean, Klokov... Yeah. This would have been in 2014. Having dinner with Klokov... Well, name drop, I'll just throw that out there. Raw sushi intestine, what's up? And, and he asked me what was the salary of American weightlifter. And I just looked at him like, what the fuck are you talking about, salary? And explained to him at the time, you know, USAW, Phil Andrews, done an incredible job.
Yeah.
The lifters are getting really good stipends now. 2013, 2014, not the case. So it was a laughable question at the time. And he told me, I think it was that senior national team lifters for Russia were making between $8,000 and $12,000 a month.
I think that's when they won, if you were world champion, if you medal. Or you're meddling at Euros or Worlds, you were making around there.
He was saying that the junior team lifters, and maybe this is medalists as well, but were making like $4,000 to $8,000.
Okay.
A month.
That's good.
But
that's good money.
And then the bonuses to be had from like an Olympic gold medal, depending on where you lived, there was going to be different bonuses that came in. You know, Russian Weightlifting Federation bonus, then your kind of state area bonus, and then maybe an overall Russian government bonus.
That would include like cars and houses and stuff.
Yeah, he said that could be as up to $1.5 million in value. Wow. And I think I've told the story on here before about Rezazadeh.
Yeah, this one's crazy.
Being gifted after the 2004 Olympics, where he clean and jerked 263, going back to Iran and a sheik or a shah or a prince or some guy who's got money just shooting out of the ground in his backyard in the form of oil, decided that he was so happy with Rezazadeh that he gifted him 263 kilos of gold. As a congratulations.
That's gotta be worth about $14 million.
Yeah, about $14 million. And so yeah, there's Iran, China, Russia, you know, some of these other countries, Kazakhstan, North Korea, probably putting a lot of backing to their lifters.
Yeah,
they would have no reason to do that. Countries, I think, who do that. It's a bit of an older idea, Cold War type of thinking that sport, and maybe even beyond the Cold War, World War II type of thinking, if we wanted to go back enough to it, that sport is a political tool, and that success in the Olympics, you know, garners you some extra level of international respect.
Yeah.
So without an Olympic status for weightlifting anymore, no support is coming from governments of these countries who heavily support weightlifting.
Yeah, and then...
And even the support that USAW gives to lifters would be going away because...
It would disappear, actually. Yeah. It would be brutal here. So all that... Imagine that, for the most part, that scale, that's decimated. Probably support is down. You know...
The systems that have created the Liu Jiajans, the Ilya Ilyins... The
unlikely they exist, you know, anymore.
Vasily Alexeyev, and going back in history, created the greatest lifters, and this idea of, well, you start weightlifting when you're 6 years old and you see all these little Chinese kids in the training hall with amazing technique. That's gone.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. Then I would imagine the only area that it still exists is in a very niche, very, very small subcultures. The talent pool dries up again. And you have, you know, basically people that are amateur. They're doing it almost purely for fun at that point. Because, you know, the world championships maybe would still exist. Maybe that would still be a big deal. It's still a sport. People would still follow it. And people would follow fucking korfball. You know, so
allegedly.
I mean, if they can clean their act up. So, you know, all of that, Yeah, it still exists, but I don't think you're going to see untested federations come out and now there's guys doing 250-kilo clean and jerks because there's guys in the United States, dirty as shit, that aren't doing that. That started at, they'd be the same people, you know?
Because they're training recreationally.
Right.
Very much so.
It would be unlikely that would continue.
Yeah.
There are definitely, like, untested competitions that exist and that might still flourish in other parts of the world, but it would be much, much smaller than it is now.
Yeah, it could create the potential for, you know, let's say like an Alico World Cup of weightlifting,
right,
or something like that. A meet with big prize money. There would still, as there is demand and growing demand for powerlifting, which hopefully is not related to an Olympic pipe dream. All right, that's not why powerlifting is growing. It's just that CrossFit has exposed so many more people.
It's more fun.
A lot of people took, you know, really supportive diapers off, and the sport is growing. but the same thing. So a similar market, and probably still a slightly bigger one, I think, for weightlifting, could exist. It is much more difficult to attain the highest level of success in weightlifting without that government support of being able to train, you know, be a full-time athlete, you know, government or governing body support, to be able to train as a full-time or near full-time athlete. It would make it a lot harder to lift some of these numbers. Now, if drug testing is totally removed and you have a untested powerlifting scenario for weightlifting, and guys are just coming in trend to the gills, it would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt it would be super awesome to watch.
And I think where there would be the potential for it is, let's say, you know, we know that the 2020, let's say in 6 months from now, IOC is like, hey, you guys did a shitty job. You're not coming around anymore after 2020.
How fucking cool would it be if everyone's just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Fuck it. We're just going all out.
Yeah.
If it's going to end anyway, that would be the way to end it.
Well, and
2020, people just flying in, just lit up. Everyone is on fire, just smashing weights. You have a guy in the 56 snatching 150, right?
Yeah. Or maybe it's the Olympics are normal-ish, and then 2 months after the Olympics, there's this huge money meet, you know, the $500,000 prize money or whatever, whatever it is. And these guys just keep on moving up from there. Because where there would be the big opportunity for that is the farther you get away from it being an Olympic sport is where that kind of support being gone would really manifest itself.
Right.
But these guys who have been training full time up to 2020, they're going to be able to keep it going for a couple of years after that. It
depends how much they take.
To have some insane lifts. And, you know, with the growth of the sport in the United States, I don't think that USAW's growth, membership growth, you know, which is largely not attributed to anything that USAW is doing specifically.
Yeah.
You know, granted, Phil is awesome as the president, as the CEO, and they've been doing a great job of making better meets and stuff. The reason that the membership has gone from 2,000 to 20,000 isn't because of this incredible USAW marketing plan or anything. It's because of CrossFit.
Yeah.
And if USAW has 20,000 members right now, and I know it's a little bit higher than that even, I don't think that many of those people are like, I'm doing weightlifting right now so I can make it to the Olympics.
Right. There's about 12 of them.
Yeah. On the realistic scale, I would be shocked that there were, if we could really count, and this is from youth all the way through the senior lifters, really count more than 100 lifters who, through all those levels, would have a real chance of making the Olympics one day. Probably 100 through all those different levels. Some others who are delusional about it, but but most people aren't doing weightlifting because they're trying to make it to the Olympics. It being included in the Olympics is probably insignificant for the majority of American weightlifters, the large portion of which is recreational. And that's not to discount how hard they train or anything and how passionate about it they are, but they're not doing it to try and make it to the Olympics. They're just doing it to try and be the best weightlifter that they can be.
Yeah, for sure.
That I don't think would really, really go away. So support for weightlifting in the U.S. from companies like Rogue, I wouldn't see being largely affected.
No.
So if it shifts from trying to, you know, national structure to money meets and stuff, that would be maybe the best if weightlifting gets cut, it would be the best scenario to come out of a bad scenario.
Yeah. It might even be the kind of situation where, let's say it gets cut, USAW now becomes a private enterprise, in which case its lifting is, you know, you'd lose members. But in the long run, it might actually become a much better sport for people to participate in, because the pressure of the Olympics doesn't exist, in that you can maybe, it can actually become a sport that's accessible to people. You know, it's not, doesn't require this grand sort of like plan. You got to start when you're a kid and all this. Like the sport, it's just the results are less, so more people will do well in it. You know, you're not looking at like how discouraging it is that you're a 58 kilo woman looking at having to clean and jerk 200 or 125 kilos to be successful.
Yeah.
You're looking at it as, oh, I can be at the, you know, the A standard in national championships and be good and win prize money or whatever it is.
I would imagine, though, that in the U.S. there would be some proliferation of federations.
Sure.
Does AWF still?
I don't know if they even do
thing?
Meets anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's still doing any meets.
But there would probably be, with the absence of the Olympics, a growth of an untested weightlifting federation.
Sure. Would they even need? Would they even? They probably wouldn't test anymore because they wouldn't be able to afford. The amount of money they spend through USADA wouldn't be funded by.
It would just get passed on, as the USAPL does, to the meet directors, right, requiring testing.
That's true.
Which. It was a pain in the ass, but it was nice that the meet, when USADA just showed up to test at the weightlifting meet.
They just did it themselves.
Yeah, they did it themselves. Yeah. I didn't have to deal with that at all or pay like $900 for tests, but...
That's just ridiculous.
That was fun. That was fun when they came. But, yeah, you know, who knows really what would happen if weightlifting gets cut. I can say with a lot of confidence that powerlifting would not replace it in the Olympics.
That's 100% certainty.
Yeah.
If we were eating those words, then that's the end of my life.
And it would definitely be a negative for weightlifting. It would be a loss of status. But if companies wanted to put money in it and stuff, I think there could be some really cool, entertaining things that come out of it. You know, I've kicked these kind of ideas out there before, but you could have some, you know, grand slam of weightlifting, like the Alico Open is the European Championship, you know, like the British Open is for golf, the Rogue Open is the U.S., the ZKC Open is the Chinese, and the, you know, Worksan or Usaka Open is the fourth one.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of money, and these guys lift huge weights, and it's like, all right, we'll pretend like it's the 80s and just look the other way on this testing stuff. And that's like the interesting thing. And to go back to the Game of Shadow stuff, as they're talking about Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire, I remember in 1998, baseball, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, and they said on TV that he was taking the 1AD Andersteen stuff. And it's like, everyone knew what was happening.
Yeah.
Like, you knew that they were on steroids. They for sure knew that Barry Bonds was on steroids when in his last seasons, 2006 and 2007, as he went on to break these career home run records. And they're talking about in it record attendance for the Giants. The guy was having like a perjury trial. Everyone knew he did it.
Yeah.
He's the biggest asshole ever.
Yeah. And no one ever really cared that much.
And no one cared. They still went. So it's like, as long as it's not being thrown in the face of the fan, and maybe it can even be thrown in the face, you just can't just rub it in after. It's like people still want to watch. They want to watch, and you know, track people have said this before, is like they want to watch 70-foot throws and 800 meters. They don't want to watch guys run 10-3 and throw 65 feet. They don't want to see a bunch of singles and bunts and smart base running. You know,
People
want to see the freak show of it.
People want to see the exhibition, right?
Yeah.
People here, culturally in the U.S., people have no problem with cheating to win. Cheating to lose is awful, right?
Living the bands and B sessions lifestyle,
right? Cheating, shaving points, cheating to betraying people is the worst. So I think for whatever reason, it seems to be this thing where, you know, I mean, how many people have failed tests in these pro sports and all this?
Yeah.
They get blasted on media and all this and that, but they're still, it seems to be largely, like, not that big a deal culturally to people.
There's, in Bigger, Stronger, Faster, our friend Chris Bell,
yeah.
There is a clip with all these different fans in it, and they're talking to the camera, and it must be Chris asking them, you know, from behind the camera, like, what do you think about steroids in sports? Okay. And this guy says, he's like, steroids? I love them if they're on my team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that could be all the fans at the Alico World Championship or whatever it is watching,
right?
You know, someone clean and jerk 275 kilos.
Yeah.
280 kilos. Who fucking knows what could be
what's
lifted.
Possible? Yeah. What's possible? I think that would be that would be cool. I mean,
if they're going to drop it from the Olympics, that's what needs to happen.
There's got to be one last hurrah for everybody.
Yes.
Just let them do whatever they want.
Yes.
Especially like the Iranians, because you know they just don't care what happens to the guy afterward. Here's a handful. Just take them and go out there.
Yeah. So, you know, for weightlifting fans, an interesting time, maybe a bit of a nerve-wracking time, potentially a great time. If the IWF is serious, they're going to clean up the sport, reset the weight classes, punish people through retroactive testing, current punishments for retroactive tests. Don't give in to the corruption of sport. Hopefully that's why they're bringing more American leadership into the IWF is because they know that USAW don't play no shit. They ain't never been about playing no shit.
Never.
And that they really clean the sport up, and we can see weightlifting continue to flourish in the U.S., weightlifting grow in the Olympics still, or you know, continue to be in the Olympics, and the U.S. playing a bigger and bigger role in that.
And if they don't, then Korfball, get your shit together. You're up.
Yeah. All right. So, Max, what do you got coming up?
I got a seminar on July 8th in North Carolina, CrossFit Mecklenburg. You can contact me via email, maxjtsstrength, if you're interested. And then we are doing a clinic, a Super Total.
Super Total clinic. Max and I will be in Buffalo, New York.
Sunny Buffalo, New York.
Yeah. Do you think does it snow there in August?
I believe so.
We will be there August 26th and 27th at Mustache Fitness and Barbell with our good friend Carly
Skarpinski.
Skarpinski. That's a serious Western New York name right there.
Seriously.
Yeah. One day all for weightlifting, one day all for powerlifting, and also talking about how to put them together
to become the Super Total.
Yes. I will be in Philadelphia, Marissa and I, on September 16th and 17th. The 17th event, the Sunday hands-on coaching for a technique, is already sold out. But on Saturday afternoon there, I'll be giving a programming presentation talking about scientific principles of strength training, how I practically apply that to program design for lifters from beginner to world record holders. And then we'll be doing the same thing October 28th and 29th in Minneapolis at the Movement Minneapolis. There's maybe about 10 tickets left for the Sunday portion of things. A lot of tickets left for the Saturday. Again, same thing, about 2 to 3 hour lecture on Saturday afternoon about program design, and then can come back on Sunday for the hands-on coaching technique in the squat, bench, and deadlift. As always, check out juggernautcoaching.com. for all our coaching services, one-on-one, team, which is like templates that Max and I have designed for powerlifting and weightlifting, tailored towards, you know, not you, like Johnny Jones, who's watching this, not specifically for you, Johnny, but it's for, you know, your size, your experience, your strength levels, your needs as a lifter. And then we have the club programs as well, which is a bit more generalized, kind of
universal program.
Yeah, ongoing programs. And we have that for powerlifting, weightlifting, and Super Total. So that's juggernautcoaching.com for that. Please subscribe to the YouTube. We're very proud of the content that we create here with the help of our man behind the camera, Mr. Shorty Sedang, strongest videographer in the world, undoubtedly. Definitely pound for pound.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very, very true.
And if you enjoy the podcast, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps out Write us a funny review because
those
that
are those
that,
are some good reviews.
Yeah, that helps us out just because we like laughing at them. And if it's good enough, we'll read it here on the podcast. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me Max_Ada on Instagram, on Facebook, or email me about any of the programming on max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your news feed all day. Hopefully you like these new little additions, the Strength History Minute, and the Get to Know Max. We'll have other times where you get to know me, and we'll see you next week.